The Boag World Show is back, and in this first episode of Season 13, we ask a simple question. What is user experience design? This episode of the Boag World Show is supported by Media Temple, Harvest, and my inability to know when to quit. Hello and welcome to BoagWorld.com, the podcast for all those involved in designing, developing and running websites on a daily basis. We're back!
Hello.
Season 13! Hello!
Yeah, unlucky for some.
Yeah, and so obviously, being unlucky for some, we have Lee joining us.
Thanks, Paul.
That's alright.
Couldn't get anyone else this week, hey Lee?
No, exactly. That's well, my first thought.
Yeah, you
fallback
see,
guy.
You, I have to confess, you were utterly and completely the fallback guy, because at the beginning of last week, I went, "Oh shit, we're supposed to be doing a podcast this week, so we're a week late as it is." Right? We should have started last week, and we're only starting this week, so I've already messed up. And then, of course, I was going, oh, who am I going to get on the show? Oh, Lee's a whore. He'll do it. And that was about it.
Oh, so it's not that somebody dropped out or anything like that. You were just disorganized.
No. I was just utterly disorganized. I think it's because I had that kind of last-minute holiday where I went off to California. I thought I'd just drop that in, you know, randomly.
I went to Cornwall.
You went to Cornwall?
Yeah, I went to Cornwall last week and it was lovely.
Good.
And I've really struggled today getting back into the swing of things. But hey ho.
I weep for you, Marcus.
I like the fact you had an unexpected holiday to California.
I know, right? That's the rock and roll lifestyle I lead now. Okay. But do you want to know why? Shall I bore you with why? I will do. Right. So this is what happened. I had a client who'd asked me to go out to do a work in California, okay? And I didn't know whether I particularly wanted to do it, so I priced it in a way that would allow James and Kath to come too, okay? And it was all set up, ready to go, and then they contacted me and said, oh, we've got a problem, we need to move it back a bit. Right, move it back to October from August. And so I said, yeah, no, that's fine. You do understand you're going to have to pay the difference because the flights, you know, and accommodation, everything are non-refundable. Yeah, they've got loads of money. So then they were all ready to go for me to go in October. And then they rang up and said, we're cancelling the project completely. Oh, I said. And so it was like, well, we might as well go on the first trip anyway. So we did. We found out on the Thursday and flew out on the Saturday. So I had 2 weeks in California paid for free by a client. Thank you, Mr. Client.
Excellent.
Never happens to me.
That's really good.
When I used to work in corporate land, there were people who were on 3 months, what do you call it? You know, when you're moving to a new job, they basically had to wait
probation.
Not probation. So 3 months before they could leave. Instead of, you know, usually 1 month.
Notice period.
Notice, that's the word. And this happened to a few people. And basically they'd got new jobs in other places. And they were told that they couldn't carry on for their 3 months in the office because it would, you know, they would be gleaning secrets and things like that. So they have to spend all of summer in the garden. Being paid.
Gardening leave, yes.
Bastards, basically. These things never happened to me, ever.
No.
Aww.
Hang on,
Marcus. You got to spend years jetting around the world as a pop star.
Yeah, I didn't really appreciate it at the time. I was too young and too green. Yeah, no one's going to have me now, are they?
It is quite funny. It's like, for very unusually, yeah, all three of us have got webcams on, so we can actually see each other recording.
Mm.
And all I'm seeing is this just mass of grey hair. That's all it is. We're just
sorry,
so
I thought
old
you were talking about just me, but you're actually me, Marcus, as well.
Yeah. I mean, you
I
do
have
mass
of anything.
You do have the best kind of grey to black ratio, Lee, thanks. I have to say.
Oh, well, like totally grey, basically. That's Lee. But yes, I'm quite grey too. It's true.
I have some hair.
Oh, yeah.
You're actually reflecting. I can just see your reflection, Paul. It's reflecting off your head.
But Lee, the truth is, if I grew my hair, it would be as long as yours. You're just as receding as I am. You just brush it forward.
Yeah, I always
comb over, Lee.
It's not to comb forward.
This must be really boring for people that can't see the video.
Yeah, well,
God, flippin' heck, Lee.
They should consider themselves lucky.
Three old men comparing bald patches. Are you going bald at the very top as well? Because look.
No.
He lies.
See, not. Not that I'm aware of, put it that way.
Because you can't see the back of your own head.
No, everyone's too polite.
So, sorry we're a bit late this week. We're a week late, actually.
I
bit late this season. Yeah. Let's blame it on Marcus having a holiday and not being constantly on call when I've forgotten to do something. It's disgraceful of you, Marcus.
Well, you know, I try, but I can't, you know, I'm not 100% available all the time.
Oh, I'm disappointed in you. Anyway, it's going to be a good season. We're going to be looking at user experience design this season, and I've it's really funny. I've written all the different episodes and what I want to do in each episode, and then I've written my ideal guest against each episode. Right. So if Lee's on the show again this season, you know that I've failed to get my ideal guest for one.
Ooh, that's harsh. But obviously, Lee's the ideal guest for this week. Oh, no, hang on. We've already said he isn't.
No, it's a good attempt, Marcus, but there is no covering up the fact.
Well, what you're really trying to say is that I could actually do any week because, you know, my knowledge is so broad.
Yeah, you're so flexible.
I could fill in for any week.
Well, although, to be fair, if ever there was a subject where you are an expert, it is user experience design.
I'm quite surprised you're doing an entire season on it.
You think you're going?
What did you?
I thought it was just drawing pictures. Isn't it just drawing pictures?
No.
Do you want to know what's coming up? Let me read you some.
How have you managed to split this into 15 episodes, or however many we're doing?
No, it's a short. No, it's a short season, which helps.
Okay.
Partly because I've started late, but it's only 11 episodes this season.
And then
it's
Christmas.
Today we're going to look at what is UX. Next week, we're going to look at building a business case for UX, and that's going to have Jared Spall. He's confirmed, right? Then we're going to look at, I'm going to do an episode on starting with the small screen, so UX for mobile. Then we're going to look at running a UX workshop. We're going to look at lean UX, which apparently is a thing, right?
What, when you talk about
UX research.
That?
Yeah, you just lean to the
side. I thought you said Lee UX, I thought you said.
No, lean.
No. Okay.
Yeah, we're discussing Lee UX, but Lee is not the expert in that field. We've got someone else for that episode. We've got one on user research, another one on designing for the gaps, which is like the gaps between moving from a mobile device to a computer or whatever and back and forth and that kind of stuff. I've got an episode on the best interface is no interface, the post UI user experience. We've got one on employee user experience. So how do you design a good user experience for your employees using things like intranets and enterprise software and that kind of stuff? We've got UX as a marketing tool, and then how to make a user experience culture organization-wide.
Okay.
Does that meet with your approval?
Yeah, we'll probably cover all of those today.
Sounds good. Yeah. Touch on them, maybe.
this is the broad, all-encompassing. This is giving the context for the rest of the season, which is obviously why we had Lee on the show, being the broad generalist with expertise in everything.
There you go.
Yes.
Can we talk about Apple's new stuff yet?
Yeah, you can if you want. What do you want to say about it?
I was going to say, have you got an Pro iPad yet, Paul?
Have you bought it?
No, because they're not out till November.
Really?
Oh.
Haven't you got an alpha beta version or something? You know,
I am running the
one.
No, yeah, right. No, I am running the beta version of the watch software, the one with the critical bug in that they weren't releasing because it was critically buggy.
I thought you broke your watch.
I did, but it still kind of works. It's got a big crack in it. I don't suppose can see that on the.
Okay, it wasn't webcam. Completely smashed. Then you can still use it.
So, yes, I have already pre-ordered my iPhone 6S. Then next month, I'll be getting the new Apple TV. And then the month after, it'll be the iPad Pro.
You're going to get one then? I can't decide whether I want to get one or not. Well, obviously, I want to get one, but whether there's any point. I think
what are you talking about there? Apple TV or Apple Pro?
The Pro.
Apple TV.
Like my iPad Mini. And there's a new one of these out.
Me too.
So I'm wondering whether to get one of those instead. I'm definitely getting a 6S. That's going to be my new phone.
The reason that I'm getting the Pro is because I watch a lot of video on it. So the bigger it... Because I can never get near the TV in our house because there's always someone else hogging
it. Isn't it going to be a big sort of heavy, clunky thing that you...
Yeah, I'm a bit... I confess I'm a little torn.
Mm.
But I've decided to go for it because I just have to buy everything I'm told to.
Yeah, fair enough.
I love it. I love seeing the new products. Think, Paul's got to buy that now. And that. That's going to cost him a fortune.
So, Lee, are you buying any of it?
I might buy an Apple TV, but I'm not sure why. Probably don't really need it, as I've got so many ways to watch Netflix. It's a bit silly, really. And actually, Netflix takes up enough of my life as it is, so I don't really need new ways to watch Netflix. But I don't know what else it's going to do, and I've seen, you know,
it's got a pen. It's got a pen.
No, that's the iPad.
That's the iPad. It's got a pencil anyway, Marcus. It's a pencil.
They couldn't call it a stylus because Steve Jobs had made it very clear that styluses were the devil's work.
But it's definitely a stylus. And that was then. This is now. They're allowed to rethink.
Yeah, the guy's dead. Yes. You know.
Or is he?
Things move on. Oh, don't start that.
And it's pressure sensitive, isn't it? So for artists, the pressure
sensitive
nature. I imagine
if you have any artistic ability whatsoever, it would be really nice. But as I don't, I'm more interested in the full-size keyboard.
Yeah. Mm. I still can't decide whether Evernote or paper is the right thing. So to have something that I can actually write on, that kind of makes possible sense. I don't know.
It was the dream of the first iPad, and I remember trying to write on it with my finger.
Yeah.
Maybe that was the thing, though. Maybe the finger just didn't... It was too fat, and you took up too much space trying to write, and... I remember using loads of different apps which did clever things to not detect your wrist and put your writing and make it wrap around and all different kinds of solutions, but I don't know. Maybe we're never quite as good as real paper.
No.
But typing. Then neither is even having a good stylus is not as good as real paper because it slips too easy. You don't have the friction that you get on real paper. It'd be interesting to see whether they solve that.
Mm.
But writing's slow. Writing's too damn slow. That's the problem with writing on anything. It takes three times as long to form a letter as pressing a key.
Yeah,
exactly. The thing that I'm most pleased about with both, not just the iPad Pro, but also the iPad Air, with iOS 9, you've now got you can do split screen, so you can have two apps running side by side. Which is useful, but the real reason that I'm chuffed about it is because now it forces all app developers to go through the hell of responsive design too. So I'm pleased with that.
That's what I like about Windows Tablet. You can do the same on there and vary the width in the apps, and that is actually quite useful.
Mm. Do you have a Windows Tablet then?
I bought a shitty cheap thing for about 80 quid just to have a fiddle about with it.
Oh, right.
And it's really rather good. I love it.
Oh, cool.
I've used it tons. But anyway, we're talking about Apple products. Stop it. I keep listening to podcasts and people keep talking about Apple products and I just think, shut up.
Well, I was just about to talk about Windows 10 products. You started on it and then closed the conversation down.
We could talk about Windows 10. I've just installed Windows 10 and it's really good.
My son won't let me install it on his gaming computer because apparently it doesn't work with half his games yet. So I haven't yet played with it.
Mm. Yeah, my son installed it and then rapidly uninstalled it. Yeah, because Steam wasn't working properly, which is the end of the world.
Yeah.
And he couldn't order any weapons online, probably.
Exactly. It's most distressing when you can't order your new bomb online.
Real weapons, yeah.
It's just, you're listening to my son sometimes, I can't help but sit there and think, I never expected these words to be coming out of the mouth of my 12-year-old son. You know, it just disturbs me on so many levels. But anyway.
Oh, wait till he gets to be about 16 or so.
You kind of expect it from a 16-year-old, but, you know, a 12-year-old talking about, you know, how to make a nuclear bomb is not the kind of conversation you expect, or the best way to decapitate a zombie, you know.
Sorry, Lee.
I was going to say, the amount of intimate details about weaponry is quite frightening.
I know.
It's like an encyclopedia of... calibers and actions of different weapons, and I just, your head is full of all of this. How did that happen? You weren't even allowed a toy gun.
Well, that's the problem. I think that's where we all made the mistake. If we'd given them guns early on, you know, real guns as well, you know, if we'd given them a real gun when they were really young, they'd have lost interest by now.
Yeah, or killed themselves. Yeah.
Perhaps the Americans have got it right.
My friends weren't allowed guns, but we spend our entire youth making guns out of pieces of wood.
I know. My dad was telling a story actually last night when we were at dinner. We really ought to get onto the show, but I will just say this. He was at dinner. He was talking about how when he was a little kid, that his parents, who were, you know, my granddad was a strict Pentecostal minister. So there was no way he was allowed guns, you know, as a kid. And yet they always forced him to have birthday parties, which he used to hate because they were just an opportunity to, you know, invite people around from the church as well as all his friends from school. So he made the most of the incident by telling all of his friends he wanted guns for his birthday. So all of these people, he had about six different guns arrive at his birthday party and his parents couldn't do anything about it. Because they arranged the party. So, well, anyway, that wasn't that funny. It was funny when he told it. Anyway, should we talk about sponsor? Going from one, yes, subject to another. We ought to move the show forward. We've got a new sponsor. I think these guys are sponsoring for the whole season. That's how awesome they are. Let me just check. I want to know. Because, you know, obviously, if they're not doing a whole season, then I don't big them up as much. No, they are. It's good. Yeah! Yeah for these sponsors. this is Media Temple. If you haven't heard of Media Temple, then you can't be a web designer, really. I think there's some kind of test that says you can't be exposed to anything in the web design world without coming across Media Temple at some point. They're by far the most popular hosting platform for designers and developers and creative-y, kind of digitally, you know, hipster-type people. They have, you know, you think, well, hosting environment, but they have this kind of single kind of grid account that can host everything from your own portfolio site up to, you know, 100 different client sites. It's really kind of flexible. And it's got hundreds of servers that essentially work together to ensure you stay online no matter what the load. So I don't know, if one of your clients suddenly has a spike, it should be able to deal with it without a problem. They have loads of other hosting options too, and I'm sure we'll get into those over the coming weeks. They've got integrated support with things like Google Apps for those of you that are unfortunate enough to also provide email to your clients, which I just think must be hell on earth dealing with all of that. They even offer virtual private servers if you need them. Like I have what I have for Boag World because I'm hosted with them. I say I have. Ian looks after all of it as he would be like to me to attest to, especially after I deleted half my database last week.
How did you do that, Paul?
Just fiddling, I think, would be the best way of wording it.
And what lesson have we learned from that?
That I can make things better as long as I have Ian's help to do it.
No, that's not the lesson.
Lesson is leave the server alone and let Ian do it.
That's correct.
Live on, fiddle on your own development copy.
Yeah.
There is actually, a development, what's a development copy? What's one of those?
That's the one that's not live, Paul, but everyone looks at and you break.
Oh, dear. Anyway, yes. So you can get private servers and all that kind of good stuff. And I can attest that they do very good emergency support when you delete every podcast episode that you've ever produced. Anyway, you probably heard of Media Temple before. You don't need me to tell anymore. But what you can do is you can do me a favour and you can show Media Temple that you appreciate the Boag World podcast by using our promo code when you inevitably sign up for Media Temple, because you will. There is no getting around it. Eventually, it will happen. If you use our promo code BOAG, B-O-A-G, you'll get 25% off your web hosting, which has to be a good deal. So you just go to boagworld.com/mediatemple and enter the promo code upon sign up. And then you shall be done and all shall be good with the world. Okay?
Super.
That's that.
Super.
That's Media Temple. Super, super.
You need
super.
To put some shopping channel music underneath that bit, Marcus.
Shopping. Yeah, kind of.
Or whatever that was.
I'm not sure what that
sounded,
was.
That sounded almost a bit like the gallery off of...
That was the gallery, wasn't it?
Yeah.
From off Vision
of,
On.
What was it, Morph?
It was Take Heart.
Take Heart.
Vision On. That was the original, yeah. But it moved to the Deer Hunter theme after a while. But that music, whatever it's called, yeah.
This means nothing to non English people.
Do 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 do.
Talking of quintessentially English, I hope you both watched the first Doctor Who episode on Saturday.
No, I don't watch it.
I didn't know it was. I didn't know it was starting again, to be honest.
I've never watched it since Tom Baker, I don't think.
Going to have to get some proper people on this show, because this is not good enough. Right.
I did watch it religiously, and I kind of just kept missing it on Saturday nights. I don't know why. Something changed in my life.
It's the only thing that our family watches on live TV anymore.
Yeah, it used to be for us, yeah. I don't know why it stopped.
I go out anyway. On Saturday night, so they're nah.
And... You're just an embarrassment, going out and having a life rather than committing yourself to more important pursuits. Right, this week, and we're like 23 minutes in and we finally got to the discussion point. This is what happens when we have Lee on the show. We are discussing what is UX, right? And so, as is always the way, I've got sent a load of questions that we're going to work through, because I announced the topic as being, you know, what is UX? And so we got some questions around that back, and I think it could prove quite interesting. The first question is, what is the difference between user experience design and user interface design? Because, and it's really interesting because you see a lot of job descriptions that say UX/UI designer, which kind of implies they're the same thing. Lee, what do you think? I've got very strong opinions on this, but...
Well, I still see people all the time on Twitter saying, it's just graphic design, UX, why do people, you know, the whole UX thing.
Yeah.
But it's just, for me, UI design is just one facet of the whole thing.
Yeah.
It's just one part. It's just one cog in the machine.
So what is the rest of it? What would you include as the rest of it?
It's any human interaction with anything. That's user experience design.
No, it's more than that. It's graphic design, it's content language, it's interaction design, it's accessibility, performance, the speed of the page, the speed of the server even. It's all of it. It's how good your back-end fulfillment system is, but your stock taking.
It is a human interaction with something, though. Surely, that's the definition. Because it doesn't matter how fast your server is if no one's using it.
But that's part of the human interaction. If it's really slow, the interaction is kind of spoiled and you don't want to use it.
But that's
yes, you are agreeing.
That's the definition. Yeah. It's a human interaction. I've always loved... I haven't loved this. You know, toilet flushes. You know, you get the modern ones. Right, it's relevant. You get the toilet flush on the top of a modern toilet that's got a round bit and then a little button inside of the big round button. What does that mean?
To the side.
I've got no idea which one
to
press.
I never press it.
Whether you should press just the big one on its own or you press the little one with the big one to get the... It's just, that's bad UX.
It is. Marcus, I could not agree with you more. This is I hate my toilet because I don't understand how to use it. I don't know whether the small button does a short flush or whether the big button does a short flush.
You can
or whether
only press
have to press both buttons to do a long flush. It's confusing.
Exactly.
I've never pressed both.
Well,
I do. I press both all the time because I don't know what to do.
I just press the big one and hold it down for longer. I don't know what that means. It's a long flush, is it? I don't know.
Yeah, see, exactly. This is bad UX.
This is interaction design, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, now see...
User experience.
Yeah, but
there is a user experience here. Of course there is.
The whole thing is the user experience, but the interaction is the problem. And perhaps the labelling is wrong. They could actually tell you. They could put an icon on it, which made it obvious.
No, but I've been in hotel rooms where, on the back wall, there's... a separate small button and a separate big button. Genius.
Oh, yeah. No, what you mean. Yeah.
So simple. Yeah. But, yeah, there you go.
But you see, now...
I was about to say something else, but Paul might be about to say it. I don't think you need
an interface. Not convinced that what you've just described is user experience design, Marcus.
Yes, it is.
Whether that is... you can't just go, yes, it is, without even hearing my logic. Because... interaction design is a separate discipline to user experience design, or is it? And also, what about, because somebody else asked, what's the difference between customer service design and user experience design? Is user experience only with interacting with something digital, or does it include flushes?
Yeah, of course it does.
So what makes you a user and what makes you an interactor or a consumer or a...
Well, customer service design, I don't know what that means. Explain to me what that means.
Well, for example, here's a real-life example, okay? In creating a great user experience for, let's pick one of our clients. It's a very old client, but I'll pick them anyway because it's an e-commerce one, makes it easier. So WFF, they still sell frozen ready meals, right?
Yep.
So as a user interface designer designs their website, correct?
Yes.
Right? They care about the website. Now, a user experience designer... has a broader remit than that. They care about all aspects of the user experience. So they, for example, would care about the emails being sent backwards and forwards that, you know, confirm the order and that kind of thing. They would care about the copywriting. They would care about lots of different aspects of the user's interaction. But here's the question. Do they care about the telephone support that customer has? Because that is customer service design. Isn't it?
It's all part of the user experience, though, isn't it?
Well, I don't know. Are they a user when they call a call centre, or are they a customer?
Well, I think the customer
one. Something.
Sorry, Lee. You carry on.
I was just going to say, they're only a customer when they've actually bought something. They were a potential customer for a long time, in which case, they're taking part in the user experience of the company before they've committed to buy something. I'm not sure if that was relevant in any way.
Yeah, but I don't think customer service would describe themselves in that way. What I'm saying is it's quite blurry, isn't it? The edges
between it's all blurry.
Where the user experience starts and stops.
Well, I think terms like customer service design are misleading, unnecessary.
But they predate user experience design.
Aren't they just terms which were around before the buzzword UX popped up? And tried to take over everything.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I'm being too literal with the term user experience, because user experience to me literally means a human being interacting with anything.
Well, no, because a user, we're not always users. Well, perhaps we are. Because you're talking about a person interacting with anything, but that isn't. It's the experience. What a user experience design, if you're going to be picky about it and stick with the terminology, is the experience of a user.
Yeah, when they're interacting with something.
Yeah, but the point is no, because some experiences are passive, right? And yeah, also, we're not always a user. A user implies interacting with... A user is a term you use for digital, is it not? Or some kind of digital interaction.
Well, you can certainly call yourself a user when you use the toilet.
Example. Let's keep that going all season. The toilet is important. And actually, the best toilet would be one without an interface at all. It knows what you've done... It knows what you've done, you walk away and it flushes appropriately. That's what it should be. Do you remember when you first saw a flushing toilet, but did it itself with a passive infrared detector, like a urinal?
Yeah.
You went up to it, walked away and it flushed. Yeah. Whoa, what happened?
So what we need is something that measures the additional volume added to
the density.
This is skipping to the episode about no interface is the best interface.
Yes, I know it is, the toilet, I hope, will pop up in that one.
Because this is an interesting one, because I've taken to calling myself a user experience consultant, right? Or I toyed with going user experience architect, because that sounds really poncy, and I wanted to, you know. But I've kind of... It is interesting, because to begin with, I wanted to call myself a user experience designer, which is what I've always considered myself as. But because I don't open Photoshop anymore, I didn't feel I could do that and that people would misunderstand it, right? Mm. But actually, I think 90% of what I do is what I would class as user experience design.
Yes.
So it includes... You know, when I'm doing stuff helping, for example, organizations set policies and procedures, right? That shapes the user's experience because it impacts the user experience. When I help, you know, write a digital strategy, that impacts the user's experience. But, and I can see you nodding along, Marcus, but there's a point where I would stop. Where, and maybe that's just because of a limitation in my own experience and knowledge, but I wouldn't, if they had a physical store, for example, I wouldn't start trying to design
absolutely
the experience in that store.
Yeah. You, even though I've said that I think the term user experience applies to any human interaction, there are certain specialisms that we all have that we can only apply that our knowledge too, and in this particular case it's generally website design and digital design in general, but I think all three of us are user experience designers, but I can't call myself that for the same reasons you just described, but I am. All the work that I do, which isn't salesy, is part of deciding on what a user experience is, so that's designing a user experience.
Yeah, so, it's just that we've got the word design has just become, because of the web context, just it makes you think of a designer in Photoshop, where the design is bigger than what happens in Photoshop, but there's just not another word for it, although architect was a brave choice.
I just wanted the word architect so that I could imagine myself as being like the architect from The Matrix. Sitting there saying long, complicated sentences and getting paid a lot of money for it, which I thought was pretty, you know, applicable is what I did, really. So it's fair to say that we are in agreement. The second question is, can one person design the user experience? And I think it's fair to say the answer is no, because I don't think
Depends what that experience
why
is.
Why not? Doesn't one it? Person can direct an entire movie of totally different aspects, so I don't know why not.
Yeah, but they don't produce the entire movie themselves.
No, they don't act.
They coordinate the whole thing.
They don't, but they're not.
They design the whole thing. They design the experience of the whole movie. The,
but they
the
don't
idea of auteur was always used, wasn't it?
Yeah,
they wouldn't
I guess
have written the script, etc.
No, but they'd have looked at the script in massive detail and asked for rewrites, and if it wasn't right, they'd have, you know, taken action to get it resolved with another writer. They're the author that makes all the decisions.
But they don't refer to themselves as designers. They call themselves directors and producers. User experience director!
I think they are better words. Or just, yeah, a producer. Yeah, a better word than a designer.
Well, user experience director is a... That's a new term, isn't it? That's seen as the top man in an organisation.
And I quite like that. I wrote about this recently, that I've kind of come round to, you know, when I wrote Digital Adaptation, I pushed for having a kind of chief digital officer. But actually, I think what you want is a chief experience officer. But that's the CEO, so you can't have that. That's gone already.
And call yourself a director if you're not a director of the company is awkward.
I don't care about that kind
all
of thing.
All these terms, but other companies might be.
But if you're American, everybody's a director.
Yeah.
Or a vice president. I'm going to be the vice president of user experience in a consultancy of one by myself. I wasn't good enough to be the president, even though I'm the only employee.
Was it Jeremy Keith who's got an amazing pretend title?
He changes his title regularly.
Right.
Goes to have
a look. Okay, so, but the point is that to call yourself, I think to call yourself a user experience designer, you've got to have quite a lot of balls, because you don't, I don't think any one person designs a whole experience. It's a collaboration team sport, is it not?
I guess it depends on how big the organisation or the experience is.
Why are you grinning, Marcus?
Jeremy's current title is Full Stack Digital Product UX Designer. Brilliant.
Yeah. Get them all in there.
He's so taking the piss. Brilliant.
Yes.
If it's like a company the size of Amazon, one person trying to coordinate everything is perhaps a bit of a tall order, but if you're a little company selling a two or three products, you might be able to design the entire experience. I don't know.
Yeah. So let's go through on a bigger company, because another question is who's involved in user experience design and how? So you've got user interface designers, you've got content-y people, you've got developers in terms of performance and that kind of thing. You've got, I guess, even SEO people, because that's part of the experience. People start at Google. Don't screw your face up, Lee.
Yeah. Because I was about to say they're spoiling the experience because they're cluttering it all up. I'm just thinking all that JavaScript
associates with Lee's position.
I'm just thinking of all the extraneous JavaScript code and tracking code that gets shoved into pages.
Oh yeah, that brings us on to ad blockers in mobile Safari now. Mm. That's a whole conversation. Anyway, we'll do that another time. Then who else have we got? My brain has just gone blank. You've even got people like. Go on, Marcus.
Most important people, I would argue, if we're talking about websites and the like, are the people that work for the company, the marketers, the bosses of that company.
Project managers.
Who are setting objectives, who are making decisions about audiences and all that kind of stuff. So it's
senior executives.
Yeah, definitely.
And so it goes on. Oh, my doorbell's just gone. I'm going to have to answer that, guys. I'm really sorry. You carry on talking. I'll be quick.
Hello, Lee. This is a bit weird.
Hello, Marcus. You need some more music for this bit, like a little Helen Dean. That'd be the advertising. So,
I wonder what it is. Maybe he's getting a delivery of something expensive.
It's a toy.
Yeah. Bye. Thank you. Big box. He's going to have to hide the big box.
Ah.
New toy, Paul. Oh. New toy?
No, it wasn't a new toy. If you want to know, it's someone coming to cut our lawn.
Oh, right. Okay. You can't do that yourself, can you?
Boring. You can't mock me for that. No, I haven't got time for such things. I'm a user experience consultant.
Architect director.
Architect.
Architect director.
Full stack. I thought you were getting AstroTurf. What's happened to that, huh?
Yeah, we haven't got that far yet. We've decided we're going to rip the back of our house off, so it doesn't seem much point in doing stuff to the garden until we've done that.
You're going to put it on wheels?
Ripping the back of your house off at this time of year doesn't make sense, Paul.
No, we're not doing it yet. We've got to get architects in and all that kind of crap.
You can do it then.
We've only just decided. What?
You can do it.
I could do it, yeah. Of course I could. I forgot. God, how did I forget I'm an architect? Where do we get to? I mean, a lot of these are the same kind of issue, really. What's the difference between customer service design and experience design, and where are the edges of user experience design? So there's a lot of people kind of wanting to know what to include and what not. And I think the truth is you're just arguing about semantics, really. You know, the truth is that, as somebody that calls yourself a user experience design, you have to, designer, you have to decide on your own edges where, what you're capable of delivering and what you're not. And you need to work with other people to fill in those gaps. But I don't think you should kind of pretend to do, know something you're not, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it seems at the moment that there's a kind of, the idea that a user experience designer in our field is somebody who, I was going to say talks to audiences, but that's your user researcher, is the person who kind of wireframes stuff, pulls it together, and then hands it on to, pulls together all of that kind of research type stuff into some sort of wireframe, and then hands that on to a user interface designer. So that seems
Yeah, go on, sorry.
So I was going to say that seems to be the current thinking, the current definition for what a user experience designer is.
Sorry, my doorbell's just gone. But you two can carry on without me.
I haven't got a doorbell. There you go.
But what's interesting about that is earlier you described all three of us as potential user experience designers.
Well, we all do that bit I just described, don't we?
Yeah, but I very rarely anymore. You know, I can't remember the last time I sat and did a wireframe.
I can.
So the kind of user experience stuff I do is more the kind of the governance side of things and the strategy side of things. I enable teams who create user interfaces.
So you're a more fundamental again. Level, aren't you?
I don't know.
That.
Equally, on a little bit of a tangent, I'm currently thinking that because we've been through this cycle before, I'm dubious as to the value of wireframes at the moment.
Are you talking wireframes or prototypes?
Wireframes.
Yeah, I agree.
Because I'd had a great experience working with Ed on a project where we went away and did a kind of like mini agile type thing where we worked solidly with a client for 3 days. And this was a very kind of design-led project. It's not necessarily about content. It's not. Am I boring you, Paul?
No, sorry. It's been a long day. I've actually had to work a full day and I'm in shock.
Anyway. I know. Anyway. Talking to Ed, who the idea of this kind of mini project was to kind of really hammer home, get to the bottom of audience requirements, objectives, blah, blah, all the kind of things we normally do, and pull all those things into a new design before the end of these 3 days are up. And it wireframing stuff just seemed pointless. All Ed needed to know was content and priorities. He didn't need to know boxes and arrows. Or anything like that.
Yeah, but I think it depends massively on the scale and the scope of the project. Yeah. That was quite a small project with a simple delivery mechanism. I mean, I've spent entire days just wireframing the donation process or something. Specific bits of functionality where you can't jump into the design. You've got to kind of step through the process somehow and drawing boxes and arrows.
But that could be a prototype.
It's the right way.
Mm.
Well, again, but my experience of doing prototypes, it's not fast enough. You want to draw something quickly. You're sketching. Yeah. You're sketching in boxes and arrows, and this is the fastest way to do it.
Because you're a visual designer, are a user interface designer, Lee, as well, though. I think that's why it works well for you. You do both.
Yeah.
So you're thinking about, I may be wrong here, but I think you're already thinking about kind of layout and stuff at wireframe stage, whereas the likes of me,
yeah, I suppose I wouldn't wireframe. That. Yeah, I suppose I wouldn't wireframe something I knew was going to be hard to design or wasn't going to work somehow in the design area. And I'd do that, I guess, without thinking about it. I just naturally don't do it. But trying to get to the bottom of the processes for me is what wireframing is good for, and it depends how complex the process is.
It depends. I'm sorry, it's a boring answer, but it does depend. It depends on the type of project, the size of the project, and I think the makeup of your team. You know, if you've got people that can do UI, have got an understanding of UI and UX, then you maybe can skip the wireframing stage, or sometimes it just depends. There.
Let's move on. What's next, Paul?
This is an interesting question. Does UX design conflict with business goals?
Now, I googled that and I saw you'd written an article for Smashing Magazine in 2011.
Really?
Yes. So I read that.
What did it say?
Something about getting a good balance, I think.
Oh, how dull of me.
It depends.
It depends. That's so funny. Did you seriously? Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
That is terrible. Oh, well,
in
read
theory,
the article.
Yes, it could.
Yeah, I mean, it's a... It depends. It depends, I think. I think it could do. And the scenario that I always give is one that's now just gone out of my head. a situation where... Actually, it's law companies. Do you remember when we worked with that law company in Washington? And one of the things with law companies and the way that they work is that most people at their kind of level hire an individual because that individual lawyer is an expert in the specific area that they're interested in. So they're the kind of rock and roll kind of designer, the celebrity, not designer, lawyer, the celebrity lawyer that they want to hire. Now, that's great, except that these rock star lawyers move from one company
practice
to another.
Yeah.
Right. So from the user's perspective, say going to the website, when we designed the website, they just wanted to get to the rock star lawyer as quickly as possible and see their details. But the company wanted to show that person the broader capabilities of the company in an attempt to make that user more loyal to the company rather than the rock star, lawyer. So in that situation, there was a slight conflict between what the user wanted, which was give me the celebrity lawyer as fast as possible, and what the company wanted to do, which is, hey, look at, our great capabilities beyond this person. So, yeah, they can in some situations conflict, and that is a balance that you have to work on, I think.
Yeah, majority of a cross-sell, right? We do this as well, could get in the way of... Somebody, I just want to find the phone number or whatever.
Yeah.
So yes is the simple answer.
A lot of it comes down to picking your moment, doesn't it? It's and another one that always gets me is sharing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to, you as a company want people to share your stuff on Twitter or Facebook, and probably the individual, that isn't what they're there for. They're there to buy a laptop or whatever. So you've got to wait till they finish their primary action, their primary task, and then ask them, whether they would consider sharing at that point, rather than doing, interrupt what they want to do. It's like website. What is it I went to? Oh yeah, I was buying a pair of slippers, right? because that's the rock and roll lifestyle. Why couldn't it have been something more exciting than slippers? I should have lied. I could have said it was anything. It wouldn't have mattered.
I saw the picture of those slippers, though. They were very fancy slippers, Paul.
They are very fancy slippers, really.
You managed to find a kind of gadgety pair of slippers,
didn't you? They are slippers reinvented for the 21st yes. century. That's what they are.
How? How can you have gadgety slippers?
Right, I'll show you my slipper, right?
They have a feature.
So this is my slipper. My slipper looks like a fairly ordinary slipper. Very nice.
Looks quite like a shoe, actually.
Yeah, because it's got a hard sole to it, doesn't it? Oh. But check this out. You can take the hard sole off. Dun, dun, dun. So now you have a nice indoor slipper. Now, if you happen to be somebody that doesn't like the flip back, just push it down and then you can have it in without the back on. It's magic. I should have been a telesalesman. I should work on QVC.
Should have recorded this.
We'll put a link in the show notes to my amazing slippers.
Maybe how much
you'll have
are
to
these
ask
slippers,
me what
Paul?
They are because I can't remember.
How
the
much
name
are them. These, Paul?
Oh, they're massively overpriced.
Yes, yes, they are. How much are normal slippers? Let's think. Fiver? How much are they?
My
50
problem.
Quid?
No. I wish to defend yes, myself here.
Right.
The problem was, is because, I don't know about, well, you guys must have this problem. You work from home the whole time, right? Do you not get through slippers at a rate of knots?
I do, no. Yes. And I don't work from home
I
the whole time.
I wear a pair of sandals. I wear these sandals every day. And they go inside and out, so that's probably really not very hygienic.
Marcus is getting his mine. Slippers
I've
out.
Where's the camera? It's over
though.
Here. I get holes in
them. I've never had moccasin type slippers.
Oh, these are
fantastic.
Hang
on a minute. We can't be talking about these slippers. We had this conversation on the last episode of the last season with Sarah Parmenter.
Well, we did, didn't we?
I distinctly remember talking about slippers.
Yeah, but
we were
actually showing each other our slippers at that point. That sounds really dodgy for some reason.
Anyway. That yes. What I was trying to say is, I arrive on the site, you arrive on the site going, I want to buy a pair of slippers. That's all they sell. But the first thing they do is say, would you like to, they put an overlay, would you like to sign up to our newsletter? Does anybody ever complete that? Because, what?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
The thing
you know,
is,
arriving at the site, you know nothing about them. So, of course, the first thing you want to do is a regular commitment to a company you know nothing about. So,
but what they do is they try and motivate you by saying you can have 10% off of your first order if you sign up for the newsletter. But at this stage, A, you don't know whether you want the slippers. B, you don't know how much they cost. So you don't know whether 10% off is a good deal or not.
Really.
And so I then said no to that. Go away. Went to buy the slippers. And at that point, I wanted the 10% off and might have been willing to give them the email address, but I closed the pop-up, so there was no way of me getting to it.
Really? That was the only chance?
Yeah.
Did you have to go to another browser and clear all your cookies and stuff and try again?
I could be arsed. Anyway, I don't know what that was. Oh, conflict between user goals and. Okay, last question. Can you give some... I like this one. Can you give some good examples of UX design? Good UX design rather than UI design.
I've already done
toilets.
Well, I've done one.
Toilets.
Yes. Are we talking about websites or anything?
Ooh, I should have thought
I'd
about
say
that.
Amazon. Amazon is a brilliant case of experience design, but a very poor user interface design in many ways. But everything they do is aimed to complete your goal and their goal fastest, to buy stuff, which is their goal and your goal. And every part of the experience seems to be quite good. In fact, they deliver things, you know, so fast, and returns are so good, and the prices are so good. It's perhaps bloated, but in the interface, it doesn't.
Cups, mugs,
it's not,
they're a good
it's not
design.
Beautiful, but
you have something to hold on to.
Whereas, it is
hot liquid without that bit, without the handle,
would
burn
he's
you.
Holding. By the way.
There you go.
That's a perfectly good example. I'll tell you another good one, a bit more techie and less Luddite than Marcus's car.
Fire!
Fire! That's a good user interface design.
Wheel.
the wheel. It'd be crap if it was square. Another good one related to the Amazon one is it DPS, the delivery people?
Oh yes, because they give you
the day before, they tell you your delivery is going to arrive, and they give you on the day itself, they give you a 1 hour slot that it's going to arrive in. So no more kind of hanging around all day waiting for it to arrive. Better still, if over that time you think to yourself, ooh, I want to get a pint, some milk or something, because I want to make a cup of tea, or I want to go to the loo, or I want to go in the shower or somewhere like that, where you might not be able to answer the door within that, you know, 1 hour allotted slot, you can look up exactly where they are online and work, and it tells you how many people are in front of you and where their vehicle is and all the rest of it. It's bloody brilliant.
Yeah, it is. But I've kind of incorporated that as part of the Amazon experience, which is totally unfair on DPD because it's entirely theirs. But maybe Amazon have kind of, maybe Amazon have kind of encouraged this for their couriers, and they want them all to be this.
But sometimes you get Yodel and they're shit.
Yeah, so they don't tell you anything. But maybe, you know, they've been told, sort it out.
No, I'm hoping
they are, because I want them all to be like DPD.
Hey, Uber is another good example.
Never used them, but...
Have you not? Yeah. Oh, it's brilliant.
I know, but I've not...
Are they the taxi
in the position
people?
To.
Yeah. So, think about a normal taxi experience and all the bits you hate about it. One is you have to have cash on you. Two, you have to... They have to write a receipt for you, and you're sitting in traffic while they're scribbling a receipt. Three, you've always got this vague suspicion they're taking you a roundabout route. Four, you don't know how much it's going to cost. You've got no idea how much it's going to cost before you go. Five, you've got to hail a taxi, so you have to actually find one. Six, if you're in America or somewhere like that, you've got a tip, and you've got to work that out. Uber deals with all of those problems, takes all of that away. So you have a registered credit card on the system. You open their app. It automatically works out where you are. It says, do you want a taxi? Yeah. And you say where you want to go. It'll give you a quote of roughly how much it will cost. It's only an estimate, but it gives you an idea. You can track the route as they do it. They send you an email afterwards with all the receipt information and the route that they actually took. You rate and review which drivers are best. It's just brilliant. It's really well thought through.
But are their drivers registered?
Sounds excellent.
Drivers?
No, they're just any old bod.
But why does that matter? Why do I care as a user?
You might not care, but a young woman might.
Yeah,
and they have had issues with that, which they are dealing with. So, yes, that is a fair comment, and I do think that is one area they fall down in. That was a very good point, actually. But generally speaking, it's a good user experience, except for the potential of being molested.
Raped.
But other than that, great.
Boom.
Yeah.
At some point, they're going to have to communicate that their drivers are all kind of vetted and registered.
There is another one, though. Halo is the London Black Cab,
the London cab
version of that, which I've used. It seems pretty good.
Yeah, and that's their response to Uber. And that's a great thing, I think, about user experience design, is that it kind of forces the competitors to step up their game, which I think is good as well. Yeah. So that's always a good thing.
I really wish somebody would sort out restaurants, because I think every experience of a restaurant is always spoilt by the fact that you have to pay at the end. Not the fact that obviously if they're all free marvellous,
brilliant.
But I hate the process of paying. It just pisses me off.
Prezzos. You can pay for in advance using PayPal.
Can you?
Yeah. And then just walk out.
I want everyone to do that because I just want to walk out. I don't want to have to ask for somebody to give me the bill. Then they go away. Then wait for them to come back again. And then be presented with a thing that, do you want to give a tip? Oh, yes, I don't know how much. And sometimes it will work out for you. Sometimes you have to kind of quickly panic and enter something else or cancel.
There's a really simple way around that, Lee. Carry cash.
What? Oh, that's even worse.
No, it isn't.
No,
cash is terrible.
Cash,
terrible.
In that situation, cash is superb. Because you basically, you have to ask for the bill arrives, you make a decision based on what whatever it is, you might want to put a bit of tip on it. You put the cash on the table, you walk out. Boom, done.
You have to, yeah, but you've got to know how much cash you needed.
Yeah.
Works every time for me.
I just want to finish and walk out.
Talking of finishing and walking out. Can we move on?
Oh, all right.
Can we
then.
Do? I want to mention our next sponsor, which is Harvest. We use Harvest. Lee, I think you ought to talk about how great Harvest is because you're so good at Harvest.
Love Harvest. What's Harvest again?
Harvest is the time tracker software that you fill in so committedly every week. Actually, Marcus, we can bring you in on this as well. You're really good at it as well, aren't you?
I use Harvest a lot these days. I did it beautifully
last week. Yeah.
So I don't use
Harvest. Really?
Those are nice.
Sorry, we're talking over each other wonderfully here. Who's going to speak?
Well, you are. You'd start. Keep going.
I use Harvest a lot for reporting now. But I don't use it myself. Well, I do, but I don't. I never hit the timer. I don't do that.
Do you know the one of the things that they wrote in the they suggested, they've given me some points to talk around. And one of the things that they say is that, you know, it's such a great user interface. Your employees will actually complete it. And I don't think, I can't actually say that out loud because it takes a lot more to force an employee to complete a time tracker. Some kind of electro prod. They ought to provide you with some kind of taser.
I say, what I say, Paul, probably about once a month is you won't get paid. Well, I imply that. I imply it in a way that we have many clients. Well, but we only use Harvest for time and materials work. So, right?
Yeah.
So, therefore, if you don't fill it in, then we will never be paid again by those clients who are paying us on a time and materials basis. And I think people get that.
I think we thought of their next feature. That basically, if people don't fill in their timesheets, it automatically blocks them being paid their wages at the end of the month. That is a great feature. But you can have that one for free, Harvest. Now, actually, I've got to say, there are damn good reasons why we use Harvest. It is a brilliant tool for tracking time that you've spent on client projects. You don't have to use it just like us, where we only use it for time and materials. You can use it to track whether you make any money on other projects as well, which is a good idea. But maybe you're too lazy like we are. People have got no excuse not to use it. It's in the browser, iPhone, Mac, Android, you name it. It's there. You can start timing on one platform and then pick it up on another. It is great for, as Marcus has said, it's great for reporting, keeps your projects from going over time and outside of budget. Well, it doesn't stop that, actually. That's a lie.
No, it doesn't.
It means you know when you've gone over time and budget, I think is a fairer comment. So you'll know which projects and clients you're making money from, which is always good. When it's all said and done, you know, when you've finished a project, you could it even creates invoices where you can list your billable hours, which is kind of cool. We don't use it for that, do we?
No.
Yeah. I think I might. Do I want to bother? I should start tracking my time.
No, you don't.
Does anybody ever?
I don't agree with just generally keeping
with Harvest.
Time.
No, are you rejecting?
I don't reject the premise of the application. It's great for time and materials, but as soon as you start just getting people to measure your time today on this and on that, it starts to become fantasy, and you don't actually know whether you're making money on a project or not because people make it up. He said,
"I can be thinking about things in the shower or in the swimming pool or something. That wouldn't be
billable." It's as soon as people feel like the number of hours they track has to add up until 8 hours or whatever.
Yes, that's fantasy. Fall down.
Exactly, and if you're working on a time and materials project, then you aren't adding up the time that you're supposed to be at work. You're just on that particular piece. You have to measure it. So it works for that brilliantly, but I don't think it works for poor projects
in general. I didn't realise that it does things like the invoices that it creates can be automatically copied over into your accounting tool to eliminate data re-entry. Now, for me, that's really good, that kind of thing, because I do stuff like my mentorship where I have to track hours and I give people a report on that. So for that kind of thing, that'd be brilliant. You can check out Harvest at boegworld.com/harvest and take advantage of all of its cool features and stuff. There's loads to find out about what it does. It's really grown and become a lot more sophisticated because we started using it really early on. Yeah. You know, I think it was still in beta. So we've been using it for a long time. So that's how much we like it. And we pay money for it, which is almost unknown in our terms. So you can get a 30-day free trial, and if after that 30-day free trial you continue to carry on, then use the code BOAG and receive 50% off your first month, which is really cool. Hey, Marcus, talking about sponsors, you very soon have to come up with, you said, I want to have a Headscape-sponsored slot on the show.
Only
so
if
it, you've, from
only
week
if it
five,
starts the show, no chat.
You want to be the first one.
No, whatever. Yeah,
you can
yes,
go
okay.
First if you...
So I need to prepare something.
I need some talking points, or you need some talking points. Do you want to do your own, or shall I do it in my super professional voice?
Oh, yeah, and I could put the music underneath, like you... Lee said, and everything.
Yeah.
Or you could just change the music to have some vocals for singing Headscape things.
But yes, I'll be delighted. When
like,
do I need to sing?
Body form, body form for you.
Or deform.
Well, that was the first one that, for some reason, that was the first one that sprung into my mind. That's really disturbing. I'm not really the target audience, am I?
No.
No.
And you never what about, the other one catchy. I remember is, do the shake and vac.
Oh,
do the shake and vac and put the freshness back. Do the shake and vac and put the freshness back. If your carpet smells fresh, your room does too.
No? I haven't watched ITV for a long time, have you, Paul?
No, I'm a bit out of date.
These are ancient.
Yeah. So you've got four episodes that you can talk about your whatever you want, Marcus.
Okay.
You excited by that?
Hugely. No, no, that's good. Yes, thank you.
Okay. Joke.
I've got one here. This is from Daryl again. Daryl sends me jokes. Thank you, Daryl. Two owls are sitting on a tree branch in the pouring rain when one owl says to another... to the other, even. Do you know, I haven't had a girlfriend in ages because of this rubbish weather. Why is that, then? The other owl asked. The first owl replied, because it's too wet to woo.
That is actually superb. Quite good. I like that one. It's too wet to woo.
It's too wet to woo.
I wish I could remember all these jokes you tell me every week, Marcus, because some of them are quite good.
That is a good
Not
one.
Not normally.
I know you will. I've got all of the you know, the Edinburgh Festival best jokes as well to go through. Some of those are quite good. So
now, but they're a bit too sophisticated for our audience.
They really
are.
Aren't.
Oh, that's okay. It's not our audience. They're too sophisticated for us. Let's be honest. So anyway, that's it for this week. We've gone on way too long. Next week, we spent too long talking about slippers. That was the problem. Next week, we're going to talk about building a business case for UX with Jared Spall. So make sure you turn into that.
Tune into that. Tune in.
Hopefully, you will enjoy it. And that's it for this week. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.